Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 554 of the JV Club with my awesome guest, Murr Lafferty. Murr is a phenomenal author of many books and a podcaster of many podcasts. We became friends at the Joco Cruise. I should say on the Joco Cruise, right? You would say on a ship, on an island. And at a cruise just sounds really dumb. So that is where we became acquainted. And I just loved our conversation. So if you are not already a fan of Murr's, I feel sure you will be by the end of this episode. And hopefully you'll check out some of her fantastic stuff. And I think that will do it for now. I'm gonna keep it brief. I'm going to get you into this conversation. And I will talk to you soon. Listen, this is a super personal thing to just launch in with, but are you in therapy?
No, I'm not. I sometimes think I should be. I was diagnosed as ADHD, you know, as an adult woman, and as I learn more and more about what that means for my brain, it makes so much of my past make sense.
Right?
So much.
Yeah.
And yeah, so maybe I should be. It's just it was I tried to get in touch with like a ADHD, like adult woman ADHD specialist to maybe get some therapy, and she didn't like I can't remember what happened, but she never followed up. And I'm thinking if your clients have ADHD, you're going to have to follow up. Sorry. Because, yeah.
She knows a little too much for where many of us come from, perhaps to a slight challenge. I don't.
I like my GP a lot. And so I've needed her, I can talk to her.
Oh, sure. Also, no judgment whatsoever. I mean, there have definitely been times where I've had a therapist and feel like I'm just going through emotions because I don't necessarily think I need it. And then I've gone through crises. I've gone through times where I wasn't in therapy and then I, you know, had a crisis and was like, oh God, I have to start with some new person and you know, just
so
like
here's my
plod
past.
through my entire past. Yeah. So I think part of the reason, because I've had so many cycles of that, I've just sort of stuck with this same therapist for I think well over 10 years now. And
wow.
So now I know that I could take a break and like come back to her and, you know, just do some catch up. But there's like obviously a lot of history there. But now it's almost like anything else. And like it's just a habit. It's like, well, I'll talk to her on Monday, whether I got anything or not. And I guess we'll just keep doing this thing. But
excellent.
But sometimes when I don't have much to talk about, I have that gross, I'm not expecting you to, like, I don't think you're this person, but I have this gross feeling of like, well, I need to entertain her. Like, I don't have a lot that I need help on. So I guess now my job is to entertain her. Like, Janet, no. Like, I'm not even a stand-up comedian. I'm not the person that's like, I'm always on, you know? But I think the combination of any kind of, like, creative performer type mixed with also being a people pleaser is where that feeling of pressure comes from. It's like, well, I owe her something.
Yeah.
I don't have anything bad to talk about. I owe her something. What funny story? What funny quirky stories? Like, I'm trying to like Garrison Keillor my way through therapy.
Oh, yeah.
Is, you know, so I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know if you're missing out that much. If it's great, it's great when it's great for people. And it also, you know, is not, it does, that's not the end all be all. But because you and I were just talking offline about, you know, just the like little moments of life and challenges like dropping a glass or a vial or something. Those moments are really good measuring sticks for kind of where I am with the rest of my life and moods.
Like, yeah.
If it's something that, you know, happens and I'm like, yeah, this is annoying. Let me clean this up. Then that says one thing about how I've been doing. And then if I drop it and I'm like, really?
I did say some bad words, but that's pretty classic for me anyway. So,
what's your garden like? What are you you were out there poking around in it as I like
I was
to do as well.
I was being slightly reductive with my phrasing. I'd planted some new azalea bushes, so I needed to water those. And then I wasn't really gardening, but I was repotting some of my plants because finally moving some houseplants, my succulents outside. So some of them looked terrible, so I was cleaning those up and trying to make things look good again. And so just repotting some succulents, and I had some propagations I was trying to bring back to life. So, and then I broke a propagation tube, and yeah.
I mean, I have those same exact tubes, and I've done better. I used to, the ones that I was using were really test tubey, and they were very thin.
Oh, wow.
And then because I think I was like reusing like a test tube spice rack I have that I sort of turned into a propagation station. And then I started breaking them right and left, and I was like, I guess this isn't meant for this. Like,
Yeah,
if I
probably
squeeze it a
not.
little too hard, it breaks. So I replaced the tubes with actual propagation tubes, and now they're behaving much better. But that doesn't change the fact that I do drop things, and they will still shatter on the ground if they're made of glass. So you're
Yeah, I broke
definitely
two
right.
Adobe pots. I did that. That was
Yeah,
fun. I
yeah.
was proud of that.
Those you can kind of I've tried those you can like chunk up into smaller pieces, right, to help with drainage and stuff
That's
in other
true. That's
things. So you can
true.
pretend like, well, I needed some a layer of that for my plants
Yeah.
anyway, for my
No, it
succulents.
works.
They want
I
breathing
like
room.
it. And my only problem is one had been sitting outside for quite some time and had a little colony of ants in it. And so when I dropped it and it cracked, I'm like, I think we're all done. The ants get to live in the trash can now.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah,
yeah.
that's also very familiar to me. Were you an outside putterer arounder when you were a kid and like a teenager?
Oh, yeah. I'm from the North Carolina mountains, so there was nothing else to do. So,
Understood.
yeah. And a lot of people, I was with a writer's group that was like, yeah, we're going to go up into the Smoky Mountains and have a retreat. I'm like, oh, great. Get to go back home.
Story of my
Sweet. This is,
life.
yeah, all this glory that you're looking at, this is what I did instead of watch movies when I was a kid. So, yeah, I played in the woods a lot. Went hiking a lot, and yeah, that was me.
Are you how big is your family, and were you doing that stuff with
Oh,
friends,
tiny.
siblings? Yeah.
No, pretty much alone. I was a only child, mostly. I have a half sister, but we didn't grow up together.
Right.
And neither of my parents were terribly close to their siblings, so really, most of it was just mom and dad and me. And then I liked my grandparents, but they died, so. Yeah.
Were you part did you participate in the it did feel like there was this only child thing that happened on this last Joko cruise, which everyone is the reason that Mer and I know each other. There was a lot of only child talk it very
Oh.
like on the performance track. It seemed like it was coming up over and over, and so I couldn't remember if you had been a part of that or if I'm just now adding yet another person to the only child conversation of performers that.
Yeah, I don't think
That's
so. I
so
don't remember
funny.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really
Yeah.
weird. When you say instead of watching movies, does that mean that you like weren't near a movie theater? Does that mean that your parents didn't like have the means or the desire, either or, and
My dad
and.
actually was very into tech, I suppose you could say. But so we had HBO and we did have a VHS.
All
Sexy.
right. Okay. Very sexy.
But I'm more thinking of like going out, and there was a city about 30 minutes away that had the movie theaters. So did not go there very often until I became a driver, and then that was kind of what that was the big Saturday thing of trying driving all the way to Boone and going to see a movie.
And did you have friends who were a little closer by so that you could see them without needing car access?
No.
Wow, you really were alone a
No.
lot. Yeah.
I did have at one point in my life I did have some friends who lived nearby, and I was able to go over to their house and play, and but most of it was just me alone in the woods. So I don't know
Yeah.
what that says about me now. I'm kind of uncovering some things here. No, my
I
best friend was
think it's wonderful.
like 4 miles away in a this is a tiny little mountain town, so 4 miles is a long way,
Yeah,
and
sure.
no sidewalks, no public transportation or anything. So talked on the phone a lot and
hung
out after school and stuff.
Yeah. Were you taking a school bus to school, or were you getting dropped off like by parents and stuff?
School bus.
God, I love that school bus. Does that extend all the way into high school years? Like, especially before you could drive?
Until I could drive, yeah.
Yeah. What was your high school like?
Avery County High School. One high school for the entire county.
Okay.
We, a lot of, I try not to make fun of my Southern roots, but I'll just be honest, a lot of hillbillies, rednecks, people I did not enjoy going to school with.
Yeah.
But, you know, I found that I grew up in the 80s, and so 80s and early 90s were my high school years, and they were, I found some good friends who were the alternative gothy kids, and I was never like that. I was just not cool enough to figure out how to do it. I know buying black clothes seems simple now, but at the time it seemed beyond me. Like, they wouldn't allow me into whatever stores. There was no Hot Topic then. But so I hung out with the theater kids and the all the alternative weirdos.
Yeah.
Which is why I was singing Dead Milkmen at the karaoke.
I was so happy that you sang that. It was such an unexpected, delightful surprise. I mean, I feel like I've spent a lot of my life assuming or having my assumption confirmed that no one has heard that song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that's one of their best known songs. We could talk about other Dead Milkmen songs.
Some other people are like, I don't know who Dead Milkmen are, they would say.
Yeah, that's true.
What comes up for me, because that was also, you know, a huge part of my teens was like, oh my gosh, I can dress this other different way and I can, you know, I can feel, for me, I think, the whole armor kind of conversation that's a real thing, or was for me, the kind of like visual fuck you of, you know, invulnerability. But I was wondering if it did feel like a revelation to you, like that, even if you weren't necessarily, you know, able to express through, you know, in my case, like, you know, dog collars and like combat boots and stuff. The music itself, I think for me, like just alt music felt like such a revelation. And I mean, I was listening to, like, my dad has good taste in music, so he was listening to, like, Talking Heads and stuff, so sort of post-punk stuff anyway. And then the Police and bands that he loved when he was a little bit younger. Forging my own taste and, like, hearing, you know, The Cure or Depeche Mode for the first time really felt like such a defining, like, stepping into something that was my own decision and feeling like it was mine.
Yeah.
In a way that a lot of other moments in my life don't feel as definitive. And so I'm wondering if that felt, there was some kind of feeling of awakening, for lack of a less cheesy term, for you with that kind of lifestyle, like coming from where you came from and around the kids that you weren't as excited about, you know?
Yeah, I was, the music really did make a big difference to me. I remember learning about They Might Be Giants, and a friend was going to go all the way to Charlotte, which was a 3-hour drive down a mountain, to go see them. And I asked my mom, and I don't remember her laughing, but I can imagine that was her reaction, which is, you want to go where? For what? So, no, I did not get to go to Charlotte to a They Might Be Giants concert when I was in high school. But I did in college, though. They came to not my school, but another one nearby. So I went to them, see them there. But I listened to some of the top 40 stuff, and my girlfriends really liked it, and I was just never as into it. And then I got closer friends with the alternative kids, and that's when, like, Dead Milkmen, Dead Kennedys, The Cure, Depeche Mode, The Smiths, really just kind of opened my mind up to, I can be this depressed. Yes. And it's beautiful.
You put it so much more, like, realistically than I did. I really was trying to, like, put a high polished gloss on there.
No, but I mean, it was a good feeling to find something that I really liked that had nothing to do with my parents.
Yeah.
And it was a step I was taking away from some other friends that I had. So it was kind of weird. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, the music was very important.
Were you an avid reader when you were in high school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And were you writing? I guess those are two totally separate tracks of conversation. But
I was an avid reader. I was the kid that, because teachers are overworked and underpaid and give discipline for weird reasons. In kindergarten, I read the kindergarten reader, and then I read the first grade reader, and then my teacher found me behind a bookshelf reading the second grade reader, and she punished me for
Oh
reading
my God,
too
that
much,
sucks.
or maybe hiding, I can't remember. But
Right.
anyway, because it was such a tiny school, we had first, second, kindergarten, first and second in the same classroom.
Oh, that seems
So
hard.
yeah, so I was a very avid reader. I thought I didn't really want to be a writer until about 8th grade, but my father has, as he cleans out his house, he gives me things from my past. I was wearing, sorry, ADHD. I'm going to go on a tangent, and I don't know if I'll ever come back to the right
I'm
place.
so ready. It's all my podcast is tangents. Don't even sweat it.
But I found my 1988 Duke Young Writers Camp t-shirt that I got when I went to writers camp at Duke University, which I live like down the street from now.
Okay.
And because it hadn't been worn in years, you know, it's still in fine shape. And so I'm walking around looking like the biggest nerd with this writers camp. Like it was already a nerdy shirt for wearing I go to writers camp and
Right.
then from 1988. But my dad gave me a book of stories stapled together with the big careful teacher scrawl on the front going stories by Murr. And so apparently I was writing earlier, but I didn't never really wanted I don't remember wanting to write until I read science fiction. So when I read some science fiction that were by women about girls and women, I thought, oh my God, I could do this. This is amazing. And kind of blew my mind open. And I'm so happy that what the kids get to read these days, so many women authors and so many protagonists. And now we're getting non-binary and trans authors and protagonists, and that's even better. And so it's a really it's good because I know, I mean, just I'm a, you know, straight cis white woman. I still know what it felt like to have that representation of, oh, wait, this is like me, written by someone like me. I could do this. Yes, I was very much a reader.
Was A Wrinkle in Time in there?
Oh yeah, that was one of the big
That's like
three.
the big, by the way, I think I just talked about this on the podcast, but I would say that that is, you can learn everything you need to know, just about everything you need to know about the basic core facts of like being a good human being from that book, plus Tesseract. Like, it's just a very special book. What were some of the other discoveries that in science fiction and women authors that you were finding back then? Because to your point, it's not like it was a dime a dozen.
Right. I was reading Anne McCaffrey's Dragonflight, which, as we know now, has some problematic aspects, but it was still just this singular, powerful woman who was by choice a slave because the rest of her family had been slaughtered and she was trying to hide among the household staff so she didn't die too, and then becoming like the most powerful dragon rider on the planet. And that blew my mind just a little bit. And there's a third one that I can't think of.
That'll pop in. This is because I
It's like on
pressured
my
you.
Goodreads thing and stuff. I know this. I've answered this. The Lathe of Heaven was in there, but I don't remember reading that in high school, or at least not early in high school. So, and that did not have a female protagonist, but it was Ursula K. Le Guin. So,
Well, sure.
yeah.
And what about, and were you enjoying male science fiction writers as well? Or were you kind of like, I'm not into this in the same way?
I remember reading the Martian Chronicles in grade school. I was disappointed.
Okay.
I know I'm not allowed to say that. Like, they're gonna come for
You're allowed to
me.
say that. Also, there's some question around like comments Ray Bradbury made. I think some of them have been taken out of context. So I want to be sensitive to people who feel that Ray Bradbury is problematic. I haven't gotten there. That doesn't mean that if I did a ton more research, I wouldn't be like, oh, I am disappointed. I think I would say Martian Chronicles may be my least favorite thing because he's the person I was going to suggest was sort of one of the more tender-hearted male science fiction writers who, you know, was like I he was very he was a very emotional writer. But I don't remember the Martian Chronicles. I kind of don't remember them at all. And yet I have like I'm staring at like Dandelion Wine, which is kind of a Also, it's kind of not even a science fiction story. But anyway, but he's pretty cuddly.
Yes.
Considering, like, Arthur C. Clarke is not, like, what I would consider to be a cuddly writer the way, like, Ray Bradbury is.
No.
But, yeah, there's still a lack of kind of, I don't know, emotionally rich sci-fi. It was, you know, felt really important, and it did feel like it was kind of hard to find for me.
Yeah, I did. I don't know about Bradbury being problematic like Asimov was.
Yeah.
I think Ray Bradbury, it's very difficult to say this without it implying something terrible and illegal, and I'm not doing that. But as much as you can deify what it's like to be a little boy and what glory little boys are, yeah, and how little boy is the pinnacle of life, that's Bradbury. And again, I'm not implying anything dirty.
No,
but
I know.
Like,
I know.
I remember, I think, I can't even remember which one, but I tried to read another one of his, and all it was doing was talking about, I think, what, maybe the Halloween tree?
The Halloween tree, but Dandelion Wine is very much the magic of being a child. But see, yes, for me, I never, like, I guess maybe because I was raised by a single dad, like, I didn't identify the gender as being as key as when I hear you say it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess that does make sense. You know, in my mind, I was just like I was just like, I'm that kid, you know? But I totally hear what you're saying. I think the thing I'm thinking of is that he was, first of all, a product of his time. And I know that that's like, but you have to put things in context. It just is not, you can't not. But he was also like, you know, feverishly anti-censorship in terms of banned books. And so he made some comments that were like, you know, like there are people on the right trying to ban XYZ books, and there are people on the left trying to ban books as well to sort of erase histories or erase opinions and points of view that are harmful. And he was just very like, I don't think anyone should do that, no matter what. Like, that's very dangerous. Like, that was sort of his thing. But I understand.
No, that's, you know, absolutely that correct. Was, yeah. But that stance is important. We need more of that right now.
But anyway, so Bradbury aside, this is about you.
Well, I'm trying to think of what other male science fiction authors I read. The one that sticks out is when I found Good Omens when it got published in the book club my mom had. And that was the first of Gaiman or Pratchett I'd ever read. I think it was pretty early in Gaiman's career anyway. But that book that blew my mind. It's it's such a brilliant book.
Yeah.
And getting to meet Neil. And I don't even know if I told him, because I mean, how many times does he hear, oh my God, your work meant so much to me as a child or as a teen or whatever.
Sure.
That was one of the ones I can think of that I read in my teens that really affected me as a writer that was not by a woman or feminist focused. But there's gotta be more. I read all the time.
Again,
killing me.
No pressure. I just hurled this at you. Wait till we get to the MASH game, because then I'm gonna ask you to call up things you like, and you'll be like, Janet, why are you doing this to me? I know food, but I can't think of a single food I like right now. And did you do any dating?
Oh no.
Yeah.
No. I held long standing crushes and pure loves in my heart, and did not date until college.
Were you crushing on people at the school, or was that not a realm in which you felt like the pickings were right for you?
No, there were some cute guys at the school. I did crush on a basketball player for a while, but I fell hard from one of my best friends, one of the gothy guys, and nothing ever happened there, and we're still pretty close right now. So actually, I've got a book in my car I have to send him. Crap. I gotta remember to do that.
Make a note. But that's what this podcast is for, just reminding people of things that they need to send to people.
Exactly. But no dating. No, very, very shy, low self-esteem kind of thing.
Yeah. That's so common.
Yeah, I know.
That's
it sucks.
It's so common. I mean, again, you know, you look at it from a storytelling perspective and as an adult, and there's just like nothing but, for me, there's just nothing but like affection for, you know, the teen that's like, who, me? No, I couldn't possibly.
Yeah.
Like, oh, come here.
Yeah.
Let me hug you. Is that creepy?
Yeah.
So you said that you did get interested in writing when you were kind of cracking open those books that felt like, wait a minute, hang on, this is written by who now? What were you writing when you were in high school? Were you kind of world building, or were you just enjoying the writing you were doing at school? Or
I was world building a terrible, terrible fantasy world with unicorns, different colors.
Great.
And then I don't remember a lot I wrote in high school. I'm pretty sure there's a 3x5 floppy disk around here somewhere that may have some writing on it from that point.
Sure.
And I remember having it saying, I need to keep this. And now as a professional writer, I'm like, no, I didn't. Really didn't need to keep that. No. One of my earliest memories of maybe I can do this thing was and not knowing how to handle it was my physical science teacher made us write us. He was just a very weird, like, crotchety old man, and then every once in a while he would tell us to do something bizarre. Like one day we had to sit there for the day for our period and write a science fiction story.
Wow.
And he gave us a topic, and then, which was absolute hell to me, we had to stand up in front of the class and read it. And he taunted me because I could not look up above my paper. So he just kept interrupting me going, look up.
Ew, that's not his job.
No, but.
What a weird thing to take on. Aren't you kind of curious now? Like, did he do that? Was that like a weird wild hair he got one year? Or was that part of his, did you get the sense that this is part of his curriculum? Like, I'm also helping shape this.
He was a weird guy. He was also an autograph hound. But, you know, I told you where I lived. So not a lot of famous people came through that area. But he had in his office a whole bunch of signed Stephen King books. And I was getting into Stephen King at the time. And I'm like, oh, my God, you've got that signed. He's like, what, is it any good?
So wait, are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Like, yeah.
Did not see that coming. What a weirdo.
Yeah, he was. He absolutely was. But but this is like a memory that I think was very forming to me.
Sure.
Because after the reading, we had to vote for our favorite. And I was the overwhelming winner.
Yeah.
And
take that,
but the thing
asshole.
Is, it's like you think that people are going to vote for their friends or something, like a popularity contest. Because I was not an unpopular kid. I was like one of the ignored kids.
Right.
I was not terribly bullied, but no one really cared much about me. I wasn't the smartest. I was smart, but not the smartest. And so, you know, I didn't know people paid any attention to me. But that day, they did. And that made me go, huh. And actually, I saw his daughter at a party last summer and told her to tell him what that weird day had done to me.
Yeah. Well,
so hopefully she did.
I bet she did. And yeah, that's such an interesting, because, you know, of course, like in having done this podcast so many years, like there are certainly stories about people who had that one teacher who really believed in them. And it was the sort of the teacher's influence and the belief of the teacher and the student that, you know, they can say, and like, I still credit that person to this day for seeing something in me and blah, blah, blah. And then there are also stories about people who are like, and that person said I couldn't do it. And I was like, fuck you, dude. I am going to do it.
Yes.
And I credit that person with me doing this. And here you have this kind of weird amalgam of like, you know, it was sort of neither the time nor place for you to necessarily be doing it. And it kind of sucks that, you know, the idea of like writing and creating a science fiction story should not in any way be tied to you having to like read it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And then he taunted you. Yet that's the only way that the kids ended up experiencing it. And then they really thought it was great. So it's that's a real mixed kind of like,
well, you know,
hey guy, I'm not sure I approve of what you did, but thanks.
Yeah, you've got those people that some people mold by looking at the kid and caring for the kid and seeing the boo-boos and stuff. And other people are just like, well, I'm over here and I've got some wisdom and I'm going to throw it at you. It might hit you in the head.
Yeah.
You might catch it.
Yeah.
I'm not really going to worry about it. but here's some, you know, I
got to go get this autograph from this person whose book I won't read.
But the book I won't read, yeah. But no, it's like I think he liked pushing us in different creative directions. He just was not very good at explaining anything. So it's just, today we're going to do this. One day he read through well-known sayings and waited for us to follow them to like do the other half. And I remember, an army travels. And we're all just like, what?
What
is he talking about? It's the army travels on its stomach.
I've never heard that.
If you want to mess up an army, you mess up its supply lines. That's the thinking. But that, I remember that was the one that just really stuck out because I had never, ever heard that. And he was just, that was what he wanted to do that day in class. He wanted to go through these sayings and see how many of them we knew.
What an oddball. Physical sciences teacher wants to break down, huh?
Yeah. I wonder if he was secretly a English teacher at heart.
It's starting to sound like it, to be honest. Yeah, it's starting to sound like it. Did you have any other teachers that you really, you know, because to your point, the resources in certain communities aren't necessarily there for what the kids deserve, for what the teachers deserve, and all of that. Did you have other teachers that you were like, you did kind of have the experience of like, this person inspired me. Like, this was a good teacher. This teacher saw something in me.
I think I liked a lot of my English teachers.
Yeah.
Some of them were harsher than others. I did not like the teacher who had us read The Sound and the Fury as summer reading and then come back and have a quiz on it on day one.
Gross.
Because I did not understand The Sound and the Fury at all.
I'm sure I read it. I could not tell you thing one about it.
The first fourth is by someone who is mentally disabled and does not always see what is actually happening. So that's the first, that's the first fourth.
God, maybe I didn't read it.
And then there's also one character who's all stream of consciousness. It's not a book for, you know, a 16-year-old. Maybe a 16-year-old these days. I don't know.
Or just a 16-year-old who, where you're reading a chapter and then you're coming in and you're getting to discuss it and learn about it as a group so that you're not just like flying blind through the entirety of a book during the summer. I guess I don't approve of that. I think my dad was an English teacher. I'm thinking about, I can imagine him being like, what? No. I don't think he would be on board for that either.
But I liked a lot of my teachers. But I, when I think about anybody, I would want to go back and say, hey, guess what I became?
Sure.
My science teacher is the one I think of.
There he is. I mean, I'm fascinated by this guy. Not to like, you know, Hollywoodize everything, so forgive me, but just from a storytelling perspective, like, I'm interested in that guy. I mean, I am. You're right. Like, I'm interested in his story. What's in his brain? Why is
why
he making
did he
the
do
decisions
all that?
He's making? Yeah. And what about, like, being in this kind of, you know, small town environment and deciding that, like, famous people's signatures was, like, something meaningful, you know?
No, I still can't fathom that. I just remembered that today when you asked, because I'd been thinking about him lately because of, you know, my career actually careering.
Yeah.
But, like, just the fact that he collected those books and just never read them.
So he's like, is he like standing in line every time Stephen King does like a book event, or is he like getting them online
them.
From someone? It's yeah.
Like, I don't remember talking about how he got them. There was no internet.
Yeah.
So I really don't know where he got them.
Like he would go to a rare bookstore. He
Maybe.
Had his like
I
rare bookstore contact. It was like, I got in Christine. You're
gonna
be really excited,
buddy.
Where
did he get those? Man, I wish I'd thought to ask.
Yeah. Well, if you run into his daughter again, we can put together a whole list of questions, a litany of questions that you can present to his daughter.
Well, I'm going to be going back home this summer, so I'm going to send a message to mutual friends, see if I can get together.
There you go. We're going to do just fine. We're going to get all the answers we desire.
Yes.
When you did, so you guys had cable and you would watch, would you watch stuff on like HBO and stuff? Were there movies that and styles of movies that you were drawn to?
I loved Poltergeist, but it scared the crap out of me. And I didn't see the last part, you know, until a couple of years later.
I saw that way too young. I mean, I really, that kid, seeing that and seeing that guy rip his face off.
Oh,
piece
yeah.
Piece by piece.
Yeah.
I was like scarred for a long
time.
Have
you seen it since? Because
I have.
That. It's like with HD and what we know about, you know, makeup, it looks awful.
It's so
it looks
bad.
It's so fake. But at the time, it was terrifying.
It's so bad. And it's also like a funnier movie than I understood it to be as a child. Like as a child, I don't remember thinking anything about it had even the slightest pinch of humor. and then mm-hmm. seeing it as adult, because one of my writing partners and I ended up doing it as like a Riff Tracks, which is like Mystery Science Theater 3000 guys. We did it as a Riff Tracks, which was such a fun way to come back to it, because I was like, it's fun when you can, when you're like, oh, there's a never ending supply of jokes I can make about this movie. But also this movie knows that it's trying to be kind of funny and also scary.
Yes.
But yeah, that there's definitely a lot of stuff that seems more quaint now than anything else. But boy, it just scared the hell out of me.
Well, I love that we're living in a haunted house. Let's slide the child across the kitchen floor instead of getting the fuck out of here.
I know.
Yeah, that was
important scientific tests to be done before you keep your kids safe. Okay, so you were scared by Poltergeist.
Yeah, I liked science fiction. Huge Star Wars nerd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Never Ending Story.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, all the nerdy ones. I wasn't as into the real stuff or the. I'm thinking about my friends who liked books like Johnny Tremaine and books about My Side of the Mountain and stuff, which were just like a boy's life in a novel kind of thing. And a lot of my friends were into that, and I'm like, that book doesn't have any dragons.
Yeah.
Why are you reading that stupid book about the boy and the gun? It has no dragons.
He just has this. All these guys just have sad old hound dogs that mm-hmm. may or may not be put down by the end of the movie.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's so funny because I have a 21-year-old, and they were not as into horror as I was growing up. But I remember when the second It movie came out, like a couple of years ago or something, I was thinking, I'm not sure my kid's old enough to see it. I mean, it wouldn't be my choice, obviously, but I'm thinking, would they be interested in that? And then I thought, wait, I read It when it came out.
Yeah.
So I was reading all of that and it's got the book has some parts in it that should not be in there.
I agree. And I did the thing that I guess, and I think it was reinforced by the miniseries that came out with Tim mm-hmm. Curry, which utterly ignored some of those difficult, why mm-hmm. did you do this parts, to the point where like I had read that book several times and had completely blocked it from my memory as reinforced by like, no one else talking about it and it not being represented in that miniseries.
Yeah.
And then like someone brought it up to me only a handful of years. I mean, it was before the movie came out, before the first remake came out. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they were like, you don't know. And so I went and hunted it down. And I was like, whoa, I did not remember this at all. Like if you told me I had read a censored version, I would almost believe it, except that everything else in it is also really, you know, is upsetting in a totally different way. It was all in there. So, of course, there wasn't a censored version. My brain just censored it for me, which is
that's a good brain right there.
I guess so. Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom.
Diablo 4.
Final Fantasy 16.
Street Fighter 6.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Starfield.
Spider-Man 2.
Master Detective Archives Rain Code for Nintendo Switch? No, is that just me?
It's a huge time for video games.
You need somebody to tell you what's good, what's not so good, and what's amazing.
I'm Jason Schreier.
I'm Maddie Myers.
And I'm Kirk Hamilton. We're the hosts of Triple Click, a video game podcast for anyone who likes games.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
I got to do this MASH game with you.
Okay.
I am going to start with, let's do three books, or you know what, I'll expand it out because I don't want to, because again, I don't want to pressure you and you've and make you feel like you can't remember something that's important. But so three books or films that in this MASH universe we're building for you, you can sort of jump into and be in with the characters. You're not reliving the plot. You're just sort of able to be with those characters and kind of have the feeling that the book gave you when you would read it or when you do read it. Three books that you can jump into that become real. And you're safe. Nothing bad is going to happen to you. You're in a safety bubble.
Well, does Neverending Story count? Because that's literally what the book is about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely Neverending Story. I remember getting that book after I saw the movie and realizing the movie's only the first half.
Exactly. Oh, and remember all those illuminated letters? Like mm-hmm. each, it was like every chapter starts with a letter of the alphabet and there's this wonderful illuminated illustration. Like, oh,
yes.
I loved that book. Neverending Story, great choice. Give me two
I
more.
I would still have to say Dragon Riders of Pern. It's pretty patriarchal. As she wrote the series, it's like you could see it getting more and more feminist.
Interesting.
Yeah. It starts out a little patriarchal. So aside from that, but yeah, the world with the dragons and the riding and the Harpers and that, just the world she made was amazing.
Yeah.
And see, I don't want to say Wrinkle in Time because I've already said two of those already. I'll go a little bit further back. Like I said, I read voraciously, but didn't really feel like I wanted to write until I read science fiction. But I was a big Ramona Quimby fan.
Oh, God, yeah.
So Ramona and Beezus and Henry and Ribsy. But I was just telling my husband the other day, it's like, you know, reading the Henry books as an adult, you really identify with his mean neighbor. Because you buy a nice piece of meat and you put it on your grill and the dog next door steals it and runs away?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to be pissed
off.
Our
loyalty shift as we start to understand the perspectives of the adults in stories. Sometimes it's wait a minute.
And, you know, when you're a kid, it's like, oh, look, Ribsy's just being cute. Yeah. Ha ha. Why is he so mad? He's a mean man for being mad at the doggy. No.
Reasonable. He's a Thought reasonable he's
a thief, man. Ruined dinner.
He's a reasonable man. Okay, next one. Three. Well, we're talking about stakes, and we're talking about. I think I mentioned it. I prefaced this whole entire game by saying like foods. So three foods that in this reality maybe you are allergic to, or you don't eat by choice for certain reasons, or you know you just can't eat that like sleeve of Oreos like you used to be able to do without just immediately feeling sick. In this reality, we're giving you three foods. You can certainly eat everything else you want, but these foods are things you can have at the snap of your fingers, and we're going to give them to you with zero ramifications to you or anyone else.
I want to appreciate hot things.
Right?
I used to grow jalapenos, and I didn't want to eat them. I just wanted to grow them. And then I pickled them, and I still couldn't eat them. But then, you know, I love the whole chili head thing.
Yeah.
But, you know,
we're going to give you some spicy hot stuff.
Yes. And then, yeah, I'll take pretty much anything sweet that was a great idea when you were a kid. And now it's just like, you're going to take the corner piece of cake with the rose on it. You're going to
putting
eat
that
it
in.
And not vomit.
I am using corner piece of cake with the most icing because I completely, that is like the quintessential representation of that, those choices.
Yeah.
It's interesting too, because when my mom had dementia and she sort of did start having that sort of second childhood thing where, you know, her behaviors were like unidentifiable unless I put it in the context of like, oh, she's becoming a kid again.
Mm-hmm.
We had that. I was taking her to get food and I was like, oh, what in the bakery case would you want, mom? Just as like a fun game. And she pointed right to like a caramel apple with like Oreos and M&Ms you know what I mean? And was like, that looks good. And I was like, oh, you're a child now. Okay.
Yes.
Like something about that was both, of course, heartbreaking, but there was something about it that also felt like, oh, I can, like, this helps, you know, helps me. Yeah. This helps me kind of put a frame around some other things that maybe I would have had even more of a broken heart about, but like if I could sort of, you know, take the teeth out of it a little bit, but just going like, she's a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Corner piece of cake, beautiful.
Third one would be probably any rich, iron-rich food like steaks or scallops or something.
Sure.
Because of dietary reasons. Yeah. And, you know, I want to be nice to the planet too. I eat very little red meat and try to avoid high iron foods.
Yeah.
And so just being able to eat that with no health problems or ethical issues,
yep,
worries.
That's
so
what this is for. That's perfect.
Yeah.
I put juicy steak, but we know that that also could include scallops.
Sure.
You got a little surf and turf in there.
Yeah.
Next question. This is like a, you know, it's a MASH game. There's some romance happening here. It could be just be companionship. It could be sexy times. It could be long term. But three characters, people, any era, any age that we can, you know, pluck from wherever and slide into your life for you for whatever your desire might be of them.
Oh, my goodness. Can I go into video games?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go for, let's see, Sam from Zombies Run. He is your operator, and he's very nerdy and earnest and is in your headphones when you're running, and he keeps you safe, and he's just absolutely adorable, and you want to hug him.
Wonderful.
It's funny, with this kind of question, I do the whole book boyfriend. I've heard of things like that, but oftentimes I have more emotions about video games because a lot, you know, the going through it and making choices and stuff.
Yeah. That totally makes sense to me.
Yeah. So I'm also thinking of, I'll go for Fenris from Dragon Age 2.
Great.
The kind of person that you look at and you think, oh, you're way bad news in real life.
Yep.
But the whole sexy tortured elf thing,
yeah,
it's working for me.
It's
working for me.
Hear it. That's why I'm saying I'm not committing you to this person.
Exactly.
To be your partner. Like, you want to, you do what you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fenris, wonderful.
And you know what? I want to hang out with Ms. Marple.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think if we ever get on feminism topics, I'll be disappointed. But really, if we stay away from that and just, you know, get the whole like, well, you know, it's a man's world, but I'm so much smarter than they are. And let's talk about murders. That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That being said, I don't know how you'll respond to this question or if it's appealing to you or if it's not. So if it's not, just tell me and we'll move on. But because you just spoke about mystery, I would say like three real life mysteries that you, whether or not the rest of the world knows is kind of up to you. But like things that you know the definitive answer to. That, you know, it's like in your mind, you're like, yep, that's solved. Like, I know I have the answer to that.
Oh gosh. It's not that I don't want to. I'm just not sure what the answer is. If I can think of anything.
I know. I really threw it at you. Like some people, I didn't know if because you enjoyed mysteries, if you'd be like, oh God, like, I mean, who shot JFK is a bad example because that's
right.
You know, but that
you mean
stuff
you
like
mean
that.
Stuff that I think I'm right about.
Not even necessarily. Not even necessarily. I mean, that could be it, but also just sort of like, I want to see the Big Bang for myself. Like, I want to see this happen and know. Like, or I want to know: did dinosaurs have? Were they as colorful as we depict them to be? You know, like, what did they really like? Things that. Or, you know, like this unsolved murder, like who did kill,
gotcha.
The, you know, like who took the Lindbergh baby?
Yeah.
I want the most ancient cliches.
I want to know what happens in the minds of cult leaders before they start their cult.
Oh, great.
That'd
yes.
be neat.
That's a great one.
And the Big Bang is a good one, but I bet it's like there's okay, so tangent again, I'm sorry.
Please.
There's a game I was rather obsessed with over lockdown called Blazeball, which is a horror baseball sim. And every year or every week the players, the human people, would vote on changes to the rules of the baseball game. And then the next week, they'd play the baseball game and things got weirder and weirder and more violent. And the rules would keep getting tweaked. And there's this one time when, see if I can explain this well, a character who could not be thrown out until a ball was thrown. Like, you know, the not a strike, but a ball.
Yeah.
And then was up against one of the best pitchers ever who did not throw balls. And there was like over 100 at bats. And this is just a text game.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
And I was, it's like, this is legendary when fans talk about this. And there's a band that is dedicated to this game, and they wrote a song about it. And I was talking to a friend of mine who was watching the Sim at the time, and I'm like, that would have been so cool. He's like, actually, it was really boring because you just get, he throws it, it's a ball, or it's a strike.
Yeah.
He throws it, it's a strike. It's over and over and over again. That is my very long tangent to say, at the Big Bang, it's probably kind of boring.
Yeah.
It's like,
I think you may be right.
Yeah. You know, unless you know all the science underlying everything.
Yeah. Fair.
Oh, boy. Three.
Well, now only two.
This is something I've heard recently, and I want to know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
Bobby What's-His-Face, when he challenged Billie Jean King, he was actually a feminist and just wanted to bring, not that he threw it, but that he was actually supportive of her and her campaign to make women's sports more in the front, you know, respected.
Yeah.
And so he...
That's a great question.
You know, I only recently did I hear that he was actually...
Kind of in on it in some sort of sense. Okay.
Yeah. But he played for real, but she kicked his ass.
Yeah.
And that went down in history. So I want to know if that's true or not.
Great.
Anyway, the Bobby guy. You know what I'm talking about.
I totally do. And I, 5 seconds ago before you said it, I would have been like, I totally know that guy's full name. Don't even. Yeah. And it's like, I absolutely did not remember. I'm going to say Bobby. I'm going to tell you while you think about the final one.
Okay.
Bobby Riggs.
Riggs. That's it. Bobby Riggs. I thought I did too. I guess I said I didn't want.
You did.
Big
I got,
Bang
yeah.
because it was boring.
I got cult leaders. Yeah. I got cult leaders. I got Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs. And then I just need one more because Big Bang was too boring.
Yeah. I really talked myself into a corner there, didn't I?
What about your science teacher?
Oh,
what if we solve the puzzle of your science teacher?
All right, solve the puzzle of Mr. Webb. Yeah,
wonderful.
What was the deal with his books? Where did he get them?
Yeah.
Why did he want them?
Yeah, this is great. Okay, all right.
Thank you.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure. Okay, next one. Three skills that we can sort of download into your brain, Matrix style, that you would love to wake up with tomorrow and be like, oh my God, I'm an expert at blah, blah, blah now. And I didn't even have to like spend the time learning.
Well, it's funny because you said the Matrix, because I did study Kung Fu once upon a time and I stopped for a variety of reasons. And I really, really wish I could continue.
I'm putting you in.
And I also wish my body were one that has been doing Kung Fu for the past 20 years.
That goes with it. You inherit all of that. It's the transformation is complete so that you can take advantage. Great. Yes, Kung Fu. Okay, two
more.
Do
want to know Kung Fu.
Yeah.
I want to understand music. I want to play an instrument. I love music. I admire musicians. And then my midlife crisis was trying to learn the violin. And while I was able to learn what my teacher was telling me, like I could play this song or that song, I still couldn't tell you theory or what different keys mean.
Right.
Or, you know, when some people say, okay, I'm going to play this song in F, and then everyone's like, okay. And then the person starts playing, and then everybody else starts playing. It's like, nobody has music in front of them. What the hell's going on? What kind of magic is at work here?
Agreed.
Yeah. So I never really understood that. My husband and child both are musicians, and I just sit back and appreciate, but my brain does not go in that direction. And that's okay, because I can write, so I'll hold on to that skill tightly.
Uh-huh.
Can I just say I don't want to have ADHD and rejection sensitivity disorder and overthink everything I ever say ever, especially if I'm talking to somebody I'm a fan of? That'd be cool. A little bit more confidence.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people can relate to that. Okay. Next one, three places in the world whether you've been there or not, it can sort of be the idealized version of what you imagine it would be. Three places in the world that we can give you a second home, like a getaway home, and we can teleport you there so you don't have to worry about the travel side of it.
Ooh, Iceland.
Great.
But went to Iceland once. It's just an amazing place.
It troubles me greatly that I still haven't been there. It bothers me. I gotta go.
You know, next time you need to go to Europe, just stop off in Iceland. They really like tourism.
I know.
Iceland air. It's expensive to stay in Iceland because everything is expensive because it's a big island.
Sure.
But to fly there, very cheap.
Okay, you know, this is encouraging.
Yeah, no, Iceland is absolutely gorgeous, and I really want to go back there someday. I'd love to go to Switzerland.
Sure.
If all this magic stuff is giving me the ability to speak other languages as well, or can I get that with the Matrix download?
Yes.
And, gosh, I think I'd like to see the Kalahari.
Ooh, great. Okay, second to last category, I would like to do three. This is a friendship situation. This is a three characters from elsewhere in fiction, be it TV, video games, books, film, that we're going to pluck out of their world and sort of bring them into yours so that you guys are buddies.
Oh, buddies. Gosh.
Or here's the other idea. Someone, some creature or thing that is dangerous, either from horror or elsewhere, that is sort of your defender. You know what I mean? Like something that heretofore might have actually been like a danger to you is now like a thing that is loyal to you that will protect you from other things.
Oh, sure.
Do you like
yeah.
that one better?
Well, no, that one's good, too. I like that.
Okay, we can do both because we got two categories.
Well, I think if we're talking about the bodyguard situation,
yeah.
Pretty much any dragon from any story.
Great.
I'll take one of those. The Black Stallion comes to mind because there was the scene on the island yes. when he's killing that snake.
Yes.
You know, I've been reading Death Note lately. I'm going to say... I want L from Death Note.
Great.
Weird feet and big haunted eyes, and you know, he'll be smart and keep me safe.
Beautiful.
That's my thought.
That's a great idea. Okay, and that leaves us with buddies. Pulling buddies. out of the imaginary.
Let's see. I'm gonna go with the Starion from Baldur's Gate 3. The vampire elf.
Great.
If I were younger, I would say Princess Leia, but she's a politician, and I think I would get bored.
I understand
that. I'm gonna say Rey. I think.
Oh yeah.
Actually, almost anybody from that group.
Yeah.
Big fan of most of the most recent movies and many opinions.
Yeah. Well. I don't disagree.
You know what? I want to hang out with Alice in like after the Wonderland times,
oh, yeah.
and just be like, you know. All right, Alice, I brought the gin. I'm ready for another story.
Yes.
Tell me about that time again.
I love it. Alice Post Wonderland. I love it. Me too. Okay, I'm coming if you get that one.
Oh, all yeah, right. Please.
Give me a word that helps describe like the feeling that you have when you know, like when you wake up and you've got kind of a perfect day ahead of you, or like a day that you're like, I've been looking forward to this day or to something in this day. Like, what's a word that you would describe to encapsulate that? I mean, I'm really getting great ideas.
I'm trying to think of one word.
I know.
The feeling is like,
it's a really stupid. It's a really stupid question.
No, it's not. It's you know, we've talked about ADHD. It's actually really good because sometimes you wake up and you know you have a lot to do and you know your brain's just like, I'm going to think about that game you played 3 years ago.
Oh, God. Ain't that the truth.
But. You know, there are days like today was actually a day where I got up and I felt good and I did everything on my list that I needed to do.
Ooh.
And it felt like a puzzle piece falling into place.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not, you know, you wake up and you've got two pieces of sky and they don't go together.
Yes.
That's like most of the day.
Yes.
But,
yes.
Know, then there's the day where the one, it just slips right in there and it just works.
Okay. I'm using puzzle piece. I'm using two words. That's going to give me my number to break down very scientifically which thing from which
yes.
category you're going to end up with for your 100% guaranteed MASH alternate universe. Will you, while I do this, and certainly if you know, you finish and I'm still doing this, we will just edit through so it will seem as if no time has passed. But
okay,
I would love
magic.
For you to tell people where they can find you and books and, you know, supporting and all of that good stuff.
Sure. My website is called merverse.com. That's like the universe, only mer, MURVERSE. And that is where you can find my podcasts, which include I Should Be Writing and Ditch Diggers, which are two writing podcasts for different stages of your writing career. Then you can get all of my books, including my original books, which lately are space murder mysteries, and my other media tie-ins, which include the solo novelization, solo A Star Wars Story, and a Minecraft book for middle grade. And you can find the magazine that I co-edit called Escape Pod, which is a short fiction audio magazine. You can find that at escapepod.org. And we do fun science fiction one story a week. And I am on, I'm most likely to be found on Twitch with Mighty Murr as my username. But I'm on most socials with Mighty Murr, except for Instagram, which is Mighty Murr 2. And I think I have Mighty Murr, but it's connected to a Hotmail account that I also can't get into. So it's like the there's absolutely no getting that name back because I can't even get into the email that will get that name back. So, but most places I'm Mighty Murr. I have a very Googleable name, which I did not plan when I got when I chose my nickname in college, but it's served me well.
It has served you well. It has served you well. You know what serves you well? I'm going to say your MASH universe, your MASH future is serving you very well indeed. This is very cool. Look, there's a lot of, there's some more grounded stuff. There's some more wild adventurous stuff. And I think you're going to be very busy if you would like to be. You certainly have lots of options. First of all, I want to congratulate you on your beautiful house in Iceland. Hello.
Thank you.
Don't mind if I do. Head over there whenever you want to. Don't even worry about getting on that plane because we're just going to teleport you there. Beautiful house in Iceland in which... Oh, well, you know, you can have that corner piece of cake. You're not going to get a sugar. You know, there's no sugar coma. No getting too amped up. It's like everything that you want and love about just going for it with the sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the ramifications. So enjoy, indulge, celebrate that beautiful house with that awesome corner piece of cake piled high with the frosting. You are fine. I'm going to say you may want to take some of that into Ramona Quimby's world. I feel like you could make a lot of friends very quickly if you had like some really great sugary cake to offer up. So keep that in the back of your mind. If you want to go ahead and share that as well with, you know what? I'm not sure that Sarian's going to be that into it. I don't know that cake is necessarily at the top of the list. But,
not really.
You absolutely have that friend in your court. Speaking of friends on your side, guess what? L from Death Note is also just right there to do what needs to happen if you need something to happen.
I've got an easy chair in the corner and a heater on it in case his feet get cold in the Iceland world.
There you go.
I got it all ready for him.
Oh, he's going to appreciate that so much. So much. All of this is happening, by the way, with just all the confidence that you could possibly want and just no overthinking and focus when you want to, don't focus when you don't want to. You're sort of in charge of all of that and are just can feel very confident and comfortable in that space and in the space of your brain and the way your brain works. So
I like that.
You've got that going for you. I know that's one of the things that attracted Fenris to you when you two, when you two started hooking up.
Started hooking up.
So, and that's again, that's you're in control of that. That's at your beck and call.
He's got some therapy. He's had worked through his issues, and now he's just tall, sexy elf, tall, sexy tortured elf.
Absolutely. And listen, if he's having trouble growing alongside you, you could toss him to the curb. It's totally up to
that's
you.
That's true.
So that's happening. And then finally, look. It's not, is it the most out of this world thing to end up with? No, but I'll tell you right now, it's extraordinarily satisfying to me, and I know it will be to all our listeners, that we are going to get to the bottom of Mr. Webb. We are going to get to the bottom of him. We're going to unlock this man's dreams, hopes and dreams and fears. I got to know more. So maybe we don't even need his daughter anymore. We're just going straight to the source. This is going to be great. We're going to solve this mystery. We're going to put the puzzle pieces of this man together so that they look like something we can all understand. And that, my friend, is your MASH results. Are you pleased?
I love it. I love
Fantastic.
It. Sign me up. Thank
Fantastic.
You.
Fantastic. My pleasure. This has been so much fun. I'm so glad that we got to grow out our time together at JoCo, especially because it's less like there's just less crossover with like the writer's track and the performer's track, which I always rue. I always want to like get two more and not be like teaching a workshop when you're doing a reading and all of that. So,
I mean, that would be cool.
I
had a lot of fun. You know, we do have to be on stage with panels and with readings, and I did do that one D&D game, so that really stressed me out and pushed the whole improv muscle that I didn't know I had, but
you
took me a little while to get into it. But I did,
people
finally.
Loved it. Yeah.
So
people loved it.
But yeah, I would love to be back and to go back and then just tell Paul that, yeah, put me on stage. I'll do it. Sure. I'm much more confident on stage than I am in like interpersonal stuff. It's weird. I'm very weird.
I don't think that's that weird. I mean, that actually totally makes sense to me in ways I can relate to. Mara, thank you so much for doing the podcast. Everybody.
Thank you for inviting me.
I can't tell you how much I need this little snapshot of fun and playful and friendship with the week I've been having. So everyone needs to know how important Mara was to me this week so far.
Thank you.
You've started me off. I started off with a rocky Monday, and now I'm feeling like much better about the week to come. So
excellent.
I'm going to wake up tomorrow with those puzzle pieces that fit.
And you're going to go get some cake.
And I'm going to go get some cake. And it's not going to make me sick. All right, everybody. I'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should move someplace new and build time machines to go and get us back.
The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Back before we were brittle. Hey, remember when all of time stood still?
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported
directly
by you.